This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary. In just a few moments, President Obama will address the nation on the threat from terrorism. This comes in the wake of an attack in San Bernardino, California. 14 people were killed in a mass shooting at a community center last Wednesday. The FBI is investigating the attack as an act of terror, with evidence that the perpetrators were inspired by ISIS. The president has been receiving low marks from the public for his handling of the battle against terrorism and will speak tonight to reassure a nervous country. Here in the studio, we're joined by NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley. Scott, this address is coming from the Oval Office, not a setting the president has used very much. What's the message he's trying to send tonight?
Well, the president is trying to deliver a message of reassurance to the American public. The White House is very much aware that first the attacks in Paris and now the attacks in San Bernardino have hit very close to home for the American public. These attacks hit in places that Americans can picture themselves being, at a sporting event, at a music concert, at an office Christmas party. And so the president wants to update the public on the steps that his administration has taken, in particular since the attacks in Paris, to keep Americans safe.
And this is a big task because the public is very nervous right now, it seems.
That's right. And yet the White House has also been realistic to say, look, it's difficult to counteract these kinds of attacks when people fly below the radar.
And we're going to go to the Oval Office now in the White House where the
Good
president
evening.
Is speaking.
On Wednesday, 14 Americans were killed as they came together to celebrate the holidays. They were taken from family and friends who loved them deeply. They were white and black, Latino and Asian, immigrants and American-born, moms and dads, daughters and sons. Each of them served their fellow citizens, and all of them were part of our American family. Tonight, I want to talk with you about this tragedy, the broader threat of terrorism, and how we can keep our country safe. The FBI is still gathering the facts about what happened in San Bernardino, but here's what we know. The victims were brutally murdered and injured by one of their co-workers and his wife. So far, we have no evidence that the killers were directed by a terrorist organization overseas or that they were part of a broader conspiracy here at home. But it is clear that the two of them had gone down the dark path of radicalization, embracing a perverted interpretation of Islam that calls for war against America and the West. They had stockpiled assault weapons, ammunition, and pipe bombs. So this was an act of terrorism designed to kill innocent people. Our nation has been at war with terrorists since Al-Qaeda killed nearly 3,000 Americans on 9/11. In the process, we've hardened our defenses from airports to financial centers to other critical infrastructure. Intelligence and law enforcement agencies have disrupted countless plots here and overseas, and worked around the clock to keep us safe. Our military and counterterrorism professionals have relentlessly pursued terrorist networks overseas, disrupting safe havens in several different countries, killing Osama bin Laden, and decimating Al-Qaeda's leadership. Over the last few years, however, the terrorist threat has evolved into a new phase. As we've become better at preventing complex, multifaceted attacks like 9/11, terrorists turn to less complicated acts of violence, like the mass shootings that are all too common in our society. It is this type of attack that we saw at Fort Hood in 2009, in Chattanooga earlier this year, and now in San Bernardino. And as groups like ISIL grew stronger amidst the chaos of war in Iraq and then Syria, and as the internet erases the distance between countries, we see growing efforts by terrorists to poison the minds of people like the Boston Marathon bombers and the San Bernardino killers. For 7 years, I have confronted this evolving threat each and every morning in my intelligence briefing. And since the day I took this office, I have authorized U.S. forces to take out terrorists abroad precisely because I know how real the danger is. As Commander-in-Chief, I have no greater responsibility than the security of the American people. As a father to two young daughters who are the most precious part of my life, I know that we see ourselves with friends and co-workers at a holiday party like the one in San Bernardino. I know we see our kids in the faces of the young people killed in Paris. And I know that after so much war, many Americans are asking whether we are confronted by a cancer that has no immediate cure. Well, here's what I want you to know. The threat from terrorism is real, but we will overcome it. We will destroy ISIL and any other organization that tries to harm us. Our success won't depend on tough talk or abandoning our values or giving in to fear. That's what groups like ISIL are hoping for. Instead, we will prevail by being strong and smart, resilient and relentless, and by drawing upon every aspect of American power. Here's how. First, our military will continue to hunt down terrorist plotters in any country where it is necessary. In Iraq and Syria, airstrikes are taking out ISIL leaders, heavy weapons, oil tankers, infrastructure. And since the attacks in Paris, our closest allies, including France, Germany, and the United Kingdom, have ramped up their contributions to our military campaign, which will help us accelerate our effort to destroy ISIL. Second, we will continue to provide training and equipment to tens of thousands of Iraqi and Syrian forces fighting ISIL on the ground so that we take away their safe havens. In both countries, we're deploying special operations forces who can accelerate that offensive. We've stepped up this effort since the attacks in Paris, and we'll continue to invest more in approaches that are working on the ground. Third, we're working with friends and allies to stop ISIL's operations, to disrupt plots, cut off their financing, and prevent them from recruiting more fighters. Since the attacks in Paris, we've surged intelligence sharing with our European allies. We're working with Turkey to seal its border with Syria. And we are cooperating with Muslim-majority countries and with our Muslim communities here at home to counter the vicious ideology that ISIL promotes online. Fourth, with American leadership, the international community has begun to establish a process and timeline to pursue ceasefires and a political resolution to the Syrian war. Doing so will allow the Syrian people and every country, including our allies, but also countries like Russia, to focus on the common goal of destroying ISIL, a group that threatens us all. This is our strategy to destroy ISIL. It is designed and supported by our military commanders and counterterrorism experts, together with 65 countries that have joined an American-led coalition. And we constantly examine our strategy to determine when additional steps are needed to get the job done. That's why I've ordered the Departments of State and Homeland Security to review the visa waiver program under which the female terrorist in San Bernardino originally came to this country. And that's why I will urge high-tech and law enforcement leaders to make it harder for terrorists to use technology to escape from justice. Now, here at home, we have to work together to address the challenge. There are several steps that Congress should take right away. To begin with, Congress should act to make sure no one on a no-fly list is able to buy a gun. What could possibly be the argument for allowing a terrorist suspect to buy a semi-automatic weapon? This is a matter of national security. We also need to make it harder for people to buy powerful assault weapons, like the ones that were used in San Bernardino. I know there are some who reject any gun safety measures, but the fact is that our intelligence and law enforcement agencies, no matter how effective they are, cannot identify every would-be mass shooter, whether that individual is motivated by ISIL or some other hateful ideology. What we can do, and must do, is make it harder for them to kill. Next, we should put in place stronger screening for those who come to America without a visa so that we can take a hard look at whether they've traveled to war zones. And we're working with members of both parties in Congress to do exactly that. Finally, if Congress believes, as I do, that we are at war with ISIL, it should go ahead and vote to authorize the continued use of military force against these terrorists. For over a year, I have ordered our military to take thousands of airstrikes against ISIL targets. I think it's time for Congress to vote to demonstrate that the American people are united and committed to this fight. My fellow Americans, these are the steps that we can take together to defeat the terrorist threat. Let me now say a word about what we should not do. We should not be drawn once more into a long and costly ground war in Iraq or Syria. That's what groups like ISIL want. They know they can't defeat us on the battlefield. ISIL fighters were part of the insurgency that we faced in Iraq. But they also know that if we occupy foreign lands, they can maintain insurgencies for years, killing thousands of our troops, draining our resources, and using our presence to draw new recruits. The strategy that we are using now, airstrikes, special forces, and working with local forces who are fighting to regain control of their own country, that is how we'll achieve a more sustainable victory. And it won't require us sending a new generation of Americans overseas to fight and die for another decade on foreign soil. Here's what else we cannot do. We cannot turn against one another by letting this fight be defined as a war between America and Islam. That, too, is what groups like ISIL want. ISIL does not speak for Islam. They are thugs and killers, part of a cult of death. And they account for a tiny fraction of a more than a billion Muslims around the world, including millions of patriotic Muslim Americans who reject their hateful ideology. Moreover, the vast majority of terrorist victims around the world are Muslim. If we're to succeed in defeating terrorism, we must enlist Muslim communities as some of our strongest allies, rather than push them away through suspicion and hate. That does not mean denying the fact that an extremist ideology has spread within some Muslim communities. It's a real problem that Muslims must confront without excuse. Muslim leaders here and around the globe have to continue working with us to decisively and unequivocally reject the hateful ideology that groups like ISIL and al-Qaeda promote, to speak out against not just acts of violence, but also those interpretations of Islam that are incompatible with the values of religious tolerance, mutual respect, and human dignity. But just as it is the responsibility of Muslims around the world to root out misguided ideas that lead to radicalization, it is the responsibility of all Americans, of every faith, to reject discrimination. It is our responsibility to reject religious tests on who we admit into this country. It's our responsibility to reject proposals that Muslim Americans should somehow be treated differently. Because when we travel down that road, we lose. That kind of divisiveness, that betrayal of our values, plays into the hands of groups like ISIL. Muslim Americans are our friends and our neighbors, our co-workers, our sports heroes. And yes, they are our men and women in uniform who are willing to die in defense of our country. We have to remember that. My fellow Americans, I am confident we will succeed in this mission because we are on the right side of history. We were founded upon a belief in human dignity, that no matter who you are or where you come from or what you look like or what religion you practice, you are equal in the eyes of God and equal in the eyes of the law. Even in this political season, even as we properly debate what steps I and future presidents must take to keep our country safe, let's make sure we never forget what makes us exceptional. Let's not forget that freedom is more powerful than fear. That we have always met challenges, whether war or depression, natural disasters or terrorist attacks, by coming together around our common ideals as one nation and one people. So long as we stay true to that tradition, I have no doubt that America will prevail. Thank you. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
You've just heard President Obama speaking from the Oval Office. He was addressing the shootings in San Bernardino that occurred on Wednesday and the broader threat from terrorism. The president named the attack in California last week an act of terrorism, linking it to strong attacks from 9/11 to the attack on Fort Hood in 2009. President said the threat from terrorism is real. He also pledged to destroy ISIS through military and intelligence operations. The president also spoke of working with Muslim communities, both here in the United States and in countries around the world. And he talked about the availability of guns in this country. We need to make it harder for people to buy powerful assault weapons, the president said. And he called on Congress to vote to authorize the use of military force against ISIS. You are listening to special coverage from NPR News. And joining us here in the studio are NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley and NPR Justice correspondent Carrie Johnson. Scott, right before the speech, we were talking about the fact that the president needed to reassure the public. Did he do that in this speech?
Well, he certainly tried, Lynn, and he also confronted those critics who said, look, he's been taking ISIS too lightly, that he hasn't taken this threat seriously. As you said, he named this as an act of terrorism, and he said, I take that threat seriously because I confront it every day in my daily presidential briefing when I get the intelligence reports from around the world, and I do take the threat of terrorism seriously. He also talked about the evolution of the terrorist threat from the sort of spectacular coordinated attacks we saw on September 11th of 2001 to the more free-floating and harder to detect attacks like we saw in Paris and like we've seen in San Bernardino.
Carrie, did the president shed any new light on the investigation of what's going on in California?
He did talk, Lynn, about the notion that these people may have had their minds poisoned via terrorists they connected to over the internet. We do have some evidence from law enforcement sources that the female attacker, Tashfeen Malik, pledged allegiance to the leader of the Islamic State on Facebook right around the time of the attacks. And we're also told by other law enforcement sources that the male attacker, Sayyid Farouk, communicated with other people electronically and via the telephone on the FBI radar screen, though the extent and substance of those communications remains a bit unknown for now. But, Lynn, this appears to be a case at this early stage in the investigation where people may have self-radicalized through communications with each other in this married couple and through the internet. And as Scott said, those kinds of radicalization efforts are very, very hard for authorities to detect, in part because they're communicating with each other and they may not be planning the same kind of spectacular attack on an airliner, for instance, or in a train station that would leave a lot of digital fingerprints. So.
Yeah, and the president talked about this evolving into terrorism, evolving into a new phase, Scott.
That's right. And he said that the United States and its allies have had to adjust to that as well. Since the attacks in Paris, the U.S., France, now the U.K., Germany, they're all stepping up their attacks on ISIS in Syria and in Iraq. At the same time, he cautioned against a sort of massive land war by U.S. forces in those countries. He said, look, that's what ISIS wants. They can't defeat us unless they can draw us in to that kind of sustained and very costly war. So he cautioned against a sort of military overreaction to this attack.
And he also talked about guns.
He did. Of course, this is something he's talked about many, many times, whether we're talking about folks who are inspired by jihadist ideology or right-wing ideology or just the demons of mental illness. But the gun violence has been a persistent challenge for this president.
NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley, you're listening to special coverage from NPR News.